Hello.
Hi.
Am
There's
I
a
a
really
robot?
weird. No, you're not.
Excellent.
There's a really weird smell in the room I normally record in. I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
Weird smell.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, there's
I
normally a
think
weird noise, so like that's an improvement.
that's true. It's not. I think because there's no ventilation in here, it's just a bit. No, weird.
What kind of smell is it?
It's hard to explain. It just hits you. So it's not bad. It's just unexpected.
Like something has leaked out into the carpet.
Well, I'm worried because this is a room with a boiler in, so if it's not anything to do with the boiler. Otherwise, this could be our last podcast.
Oh. Yeah, boiler
I'm sure.
explosions are generally considered to be like a bad thing.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine.
I
How
didn't
are
even see
you?
you come online though, because I was so busy planning something, which I mean, call me crazy, but like I've basically sick of indoors and was planning a walk from Land's End to John O'Groats, and I've got about 300 or so miles into it at the moment. I mean, mentally in Northwich.
Jesus.
Yeah, I don't think this is actually a realistic thing, but it's kind of something I've been planning just because.
It's nice to have isolation goals.
Yeah. Well, I was like day one is 17 miles, and I'm like thinking that's probably not an accomplishable goal every day. But then day three is like 26 miles, so
Yeah, that's probably not happening.
yeah. A lot of the days after that are a lot lower, but it's just I've tried to balance it so it's actually like a believable thing. The one day is like 7 miles. And I got to like day 16, I was in Monmouth and I was like, I'm probably just gonna have a rest.
How many days would this be? Day 16.
Don't know. I'm on day 24 at the moment, and that's Northwich, which is sort of not quite Liverpool.
Right. Good luck.
Yeah, it's never gonna happen, but like it's something
With
to keep
that
me
attitude.
yeah, I guess so. I don't feel like it's something I am capable of doing. But like I do like a walk, so I'm just scrolling up. My route
Right.
takes me through Carlisle, which is I would probably give up at that point. Because I don't know if you've ever been to Carlisle, but it is bleak. It's like the end of days.
No, I'm not sure I even know where Carlisle is,
It's
really.
like on the border into Scotland, and there's just nothing there. It's like a
Right.
big empty nothing for miles and miles and miles.
I see. Anyway, should we talk wrestling?
Yeah, let's talk about WrestleMania. No, we're not talking about wrestling then. I don't know about you, but like night one, I found extremely hard going. It's just the whole empty. I haven't watched any of this empty arena stuff because I can't bring myself to do it. And so this is like the first empty arena show that I'd watched, and I found it jarring that they tried to shoot it exactly the same way as they would if there was a crowd there. So it's
Well,
like,
they actually changed it a little bit. At first, they had the hard cam in the normal place, so they were just shooting into empty chairs. At least here, they've moved the hard cam around, so you're looking at the
like the
entrance
entrance.
stage.
I
Yeah.
appreciate that at least, but like just in general, it just showed how uncreative they are. That they had to stick to the same setup. Like everything had to look the same. And they've been doing this for for 20 years, so I probably shouldn't be surprised, but why are there guardrails? Why have they put guardrails there? What's the point? It's just because it's part of the set, and it just doesn't need to be there. It's completely superfluous.
I see the guardrails don't upset me that much. You're not the first person to bring up. It's weird that they've set everything up as if there was going to be a crowd, but they just didn't show up or something, you know? like it's a bad indie show. But that doesn't annoy me as much. What annoyed me is the fact that, especially on night one, it seemed like things changed on night two. But on night one, everyone was working as if there was still a crowd.
Yeah.
In that tag match, you had Nikki Cross trying to do the amp up the crowd claps. You had Drew Gulak doing a yes chant. It was all just very, very weird.
Yeah, it took me a very long time to get into night one. I'm not convinced I ever did get into night one. It was just... It was that jarring all the way through. And by the time you got to like the better stuff, which I guess you'd say the ladder match and the Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins match, I didn't care by that point. I was already that out of it that I couldn't get into anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it was difficult for me to get into the matches as well. But I think on night one, at least, there wasn't very much actively bad. I know we're going to talk about the Boneyard match because you and I have very different ideas on that match. But apart from that, there wasn't anything you could out and out call bad, I think.
It was a consistent night. And Braun was outright terrible, but at least they kept it really short.
Yeah, you know, I almost didn't even count that.
Absolutely no chemistry at all. It was just... But there was nothing to it, so.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not sure I even count that just because it was like 2 minutes and 9 moves or something.
Oh, you had Corbin and Elias on the show as well, so that.
That sucked. Yeah. Maybe it was a bad show.
I've shot a couple of holes in your in your narrative.
I think what it is because night two had that Orton Edge match, like the worst thing of the year. I think you almost forget the badness of night one because nothing's touching that match.
No, I would agree with that. But yeah, night one, I generally struggled to get into it. And it was for a number of reasons. So like, I hadn't watched anything with no crowd. So that was one of the reasons. But also... I had no sound on for it as well, so it felt like particularly cold, like a real vacuum of a show. And the reason why I had no sound on is because I was in like an audio group chat with like 10 other people, and we were just watching the show. And this also kind of led to a level of hive mind cynicism, where like there's a degree of hatred for everything, and it just kind of is amplified. So, I mean, I didn't bring a lot of positivity to the whole thing myself. And we had a good time. Like it was a great laugh. It was more fun having the chat than it was watching the show. So that's how I watched night one. And then night two, I was still in like a voice chat, but there was less people in there and it was less intrusive to how I felt about the show, because I had a little bit of sound on there and I was kind of paying more attention to it. So you could sort of blame my malaise of night one into the viewing conditions that I watched it under.
Yeah, I dipped in and out of that voice channel throughout both nights, and I did find there was a lot more people in there night one, and there was a lot more general cynicism.
I think it took a while to just get used to the concept as well. So it was very easy to hate night one. Whereas like once I got night one out of the way, it was like Okay, I kind of know what I'm letting myself in for here, and I enjoyed Night 2 better because of that, I think.
It might also be, and I mean, I'm contradicting what I said earlier, which is what I do on this podcast all the time. You always have to shift your narrative. Come on. It might just be that Night One was just worse, so it invited more cynicism compared to Night Two.
It might be. I mean, if we'd had it the other way around, though, I suspect, like, I would have hated Night 2 if that came first. Just because of the cold nature of the show, I think.
Sure.
But then, like you say about the way that certain wrestlers behaved on Night 1, there was less of that on Night 2. So I don't know if they. I don't know what order they recorded all this in as well. So it might just be a case that they learn from mistakes. But then I. Some of the things that they were doing, like you say, with Gulak and his yes chant, it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I also got the impression on night two, everyone was working a bit snugger. I don't know
Yeah.
if that was the case in night one. I think with this kind of show where there's no crowd, you need to be working really tight. And it didn't, like, as much as I hated Elias Corbin, they worked a little bit stiff, and the woman's tag was a little bit snug in places. So maybe they realized, and then when it came to filming night two, assuming they filmed it
Yeah, assuming they filmed it without
chronologically.
order, which you can never assume that with
Yeah.
WWE, they could have filmed it in any order.
But it seemed like some people realized we need to work a bit snugger, a bit tighter.
Well, that Charlotte Rhea Ripley match from Night 2, that was the benchmark for snugness of the weekend. They were really laying it in that match, and it felt palpable. And I think that kind of set the tone as well for Night 2. Because that was, well, it wasn't the first match, but it was the first match of the proper card, and they really kind of laid it down there and said, "This is what we're going to do." I don't know. I just kind of enjoyed the night because of the, I think another thing was that we're going to talk in more detail with Edge and Randy Orton. We're just kind of in generalizations at the moment, but with Edge and Orton, it was boring. So. We weren't like yelling negative stuff at the match. It was just people were falling asleep. So that there's a difference between that and the badness of Night One, which was just generally, I just thought things didn't make sense. So we were more critical, especially at the. So I'm going to use the ladder match as an example because people were saying this is a good match, and I don't really agree with that at all. They did some fun stuff, but it wasn't a good match at all. But the finish was laughable.
The finish was really, really dumb.
Yes.
It was a joke. I understand sort of what they're trying to do, the heel wins by the skin of his teeth and all of that. I think it was a creative finish, but I don't think it actually worked in execution. If the finish on paper, I actually really like. I think doing it in front of no crowd, it doesn't work as well.
I think you can get away with that if it's one belt.
Yeah, that's true as
But it
well.
being two belts, it just comes across as even more contrived and stupid.
That's fair. That's fair.
Whereas, like a single belt, you can have two guys fighting over it and then it falls and the other guy catches it. And I'd kind of be all right with that. But it's not like he even caught the belts.
Yeah, they just sort of
They
fell
just
on him
fell
and he
and then he
grabbed
picked them
them.
up and he was like, ah, oh, I'm the winner. Are
Yeah.
you though?
They've done that kind of finish once before for a singles title. I think it was an IC ladder match or something. And I remember at that time people weren't really happy with it, but I felt like it worked. So I think the finish itself isn't the issue. It's the execution, and
Well, this is the thing.
it's
It's like that was the best they could do with that. It's pre-taped. Just do it again.
yeah.
Yeah,
And like we know, it's come out now that they've, while filming these matches, they were retaping stuff. And I mean, in that women's tag match, you can literally see the edit points. So it's not like they thought, oh no, it's a wrestling match, we just have to film whatever happens.
Because they do that many cuts in these shows anyway, that, yeah, you can just do it again. And I don't think anyone looks at that finish and goes like, oh, that was great. Because like, why would you? It was awful.
Yeah.
I don't think that's even a booking issue, because even if you look at it and go like, this is a stupid idea, but if it's executed right, it could look okay. Maybe they did like five takes and that was the best one.
That's even more depressing.
Yeah, can you imagine what the other takes were like? I guess it's belt a case of like, you can't have him fall onto a ladder a load of times, so they would have had to have just done the belt falling bit. But yeah, I don't think it was the right finish.
No, I still think the ladder match was one of the better matches on the show. I agree the finish didn't work, but I enjoyed just the nutty bumps. It was a fireworks show, I think, and it worked for me.
Yeah, I might have to rewatch that, because like, I don't remember a lot of it. I remember there being dives and things, but I thought it was dumb, and they did a lot of slow climbing as well, which always irks me. So it felt like they hit a lot of tropes that they didn't need to do. And yeah, it wasn't... I didn't like it particularly. There were a few matches on night one that I didn't like in the slightest. Like Becky Lynch and Shayna Baszler, I didn't like that match at all. Mainly because the finish was so bad. Again, that's a finish that like, who in their right mind has that as a finish?
I think with that specifically, they probably realised they don't want Shayna's big coronation to be in front of no fans.
Yeah, but don't make her tap out.
She didn't tap out, did she? She got rolled up, basically.
Oh, okay. I can't remember. I thought that was finished.
It was like a weird... Rhea tapped out. Rhea tapped out. That's the one you can argue about.
This is where like a lack of notes that I made on night one is coming back to bite me, because I just put the finish sucked and I was like, I'm pretty sure she tapped it.
No, it was Shayna got Becky in the Gojira clutch, I forgot what they call it, and Becky sort of reversed it into a schoolboy or pin thing.
Oh, okay.
It was Brett Austin Survivor Series?
Yeah, I know the finish. It's the one where he refuses to let go of the hold and pins himself. It's technically it's Brett Piper from WrestleMania 8.
Yeah, that's the better example. That's the better example, yeah. Yeah. I think with that, it was just a case of Shayna's big coronation shouldn't be in front of their fans. And the way the finish is done, I think it protects Shayna enough where it's not that she got beat by Becky's move. She just had a slight lapse. And, you know, this angle is going to continue because it sort of has to.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing else to do.
But when's the next show in front of a crowd, though? Like, what, 3 months? 4 months?
Well, they were advertising Money in the Bank for May.
That's not
which, happening. I mean, they might just do it like this in front of their crowd.
I don't know. Who knows? I mean, we had the conversation last time about Corona, but we kind of jump off into a separate little tangent here. But we talked about coronavirus last time and how basically everything's cancelled for a while. But you can't really put a timescale on it, because if you come out of lockdown and then it flares up again, you're back where you started. So, I mean, if the United States And the US is a really poor example as well, because they're so far behind everyone else that if they try and come out of lockdown too early, they can just have it all happen again. And who knows how long it's going to take to return to a sense of normality. I mean, we said like 4 months was like a rough guess. But
Yeah, I'm not expecting shows in front of crowds before August, realistically.
yeah, so that's 4 months
Yeah.
from now. So I honestly don't know what they're going to do, because like you can't keep things in a holding pattern for that long. I assume they've taped a bunch of shows already, but who knows
So
what they've.
I think they've taped a couple weeks worth and are planning on taping more this week, but I honestly.
Are they able to tape at the moment? I wasn't sure what the deal was.
I think technically they're in a lockdown state, but there's some kind of loophole they found, maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
It's a complicated situation, which, to be honest, I haven't been fully following, so I don't want to say something stupid. That would be a first for me, wouldn't it? Not wanting
Yeah.
to say something stupid.
Yeah, so I don't. So it just occurred to me that I hadn't actually even read the review, the spoilers for Raw, like let alone watch the show, because we actually delayed the taping until Tuesday so we could get Raw out the way. I don't
Yeah,
even know what happened.
I have no idea what happened on Raw, I'm going to
Okay.
be honest with you. I woke up like an hour ago, if
Well,
that.
we'll get to that. I'll read some stuff out while when we get to the end of the WrestleMania,
Yeah.
so we can have a chat about that.
Should we go through the show, sort of, not match by match, but talk more in detail about some of these
Yeah,
matches?
sure. So we'll start with night one. Gulak Cesaro was fine.
Yeah, fun little pre-show match. A bit of a dream match, so I'm happy it happened. I like that Cesaro used the UFO as the finish. That was
Yeah,
quite cool.
I like the hands on the hips.
Yeah, it worked well. Cool little match. I like that Gulak is getting a couple cool matches.
Yeah, it's part of this whole Daniel Bryan book yourself thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
This,
basically.
I think he's just been given some guys and gone like, "Hey, you can have these guys. We're not doing anything with them." So.
Yeah. Just don't leave.
Yeah.
Don't take these guys we don't care about. Just don't leave.
Yeah, it's good. It's probably the most I'm enjoying the company is the stuff that Daniel Bryan's doing on his own. Which speaks volumes about the WWE as a system. I only really care about one guy doing fun stuff with his mates.
Yeah.
So after that was Kabuki Warriors against whatever Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss called themselves as a team. I'm amazed their team has lasted this long. I thought for sure one of them was going to turn.
Yeah, so when it started, the whole idea, I think, was that Nikki was being super naive and Alexa was going to turn on her. I think either they just gave up on that story, or I think they like the team of Alexa and Nikki for some reason.
I don't know. I don't
So.
really see them as a team. I just think they're two totally different worlds, and it doesn't make sense that they're a team at all. But
They have a weird chemistry to them. Every time I've seen them, I've thought, you know what? It's like the goth girl at school being best friends with the popular girl. It doesn't make sense, but when you see it, you think, you know what? Maybe there's something there.
I don't know. I'm not convinced that Alexa is a good enough actress to make me believe that she is friends with a weirdo outcast after all that she has done as a character. It just as a character, it doesn't make sense to me.
That's fair. I mean, it's not a team I'm going to defend that hard because I
You're
don't
not that
really
into
care.
it.
No.
Yeah, I thought this match was fine. Yeah, I probably as with. just about everything. It would have been better if there was a crowd there. I don't know if there was a possibility of like just having a bunch of their guys just sit around making noise, but it just would have been. I think anything that they did was going to be lame, so they went with nothing.
I think the issue was they're only allowed like 10 people together at one time. So you've got four people in the match, a referee, two commentators, a couple cameramen, you're really pushing it.
Yeah. It wouldn't have shocked me if he'd have piped crowd noise in. But then I guess
That
you.
becomes too, that's like, I see what you're going
Well,
for,
they
but I
do
think that.
like the fake graphics. It's like they're basically putting them in an augmented world. Like it's basically a video game at this point, so why not just have the SmackDown cutout crowd thing and just pump some noise in?
I think that would have come across really, really badly,
It
to
would have done, yeah. But I'm
be
sur I can see them doing it, is what I'm
honest.
saying.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, this, again, it was a fine little match. I think basically everything on this show I had at like 3 stars because everyone tried, but it just didn't, I just didn't know how to rate it. It was so weird.
Yeah, it was very difficult.
Yeah.
I didn't rate anything on this show at 3 stars or higher, just because I just didn't know what I was doing. Part of it is
Yeah.
part of my rating system is based on how the crowd reacts, and if there's no
Yeah.
crowd to react, then that takes like a chunk out of it. And I couldn't adjust my ratings at all during this show, whereas like the next night, I was more into the opener, and that broke the rating system because I was actually into the match.
Sure.
But yeah, for this, it was like everything was like 2.5 stars or less.
That's fair. That's fair. What was the next match? I don't have the card in front of me.
Corbin Elias.
Yeah, this sucked. Why? Well, I don't understand, right? What I don't understand. Elias hits Corbin over the back with a guitar, right?
I don't remember
That happened.
that. Just you don't remember this match at all.
That happened. That happened. Elias hit, because you know. Elias comes out with a guitar, like, yeah, I'm a big guitar man or whatever. Hits Corbin over the
Called
back with a
musicians,
guitar.
Akil.
That's the word, musician.
Big guitar man. Yeah.
A big guitar man or whatever.
I have a massive tangent I want to go and off on, because yesterday I watched Slumber Party Massacre 2, and the bad guy in that, like the like killer, is a figment of the lead actress's imagination, and he's a rockabilly guitar player from hell, and he has like a drill on the end of his guitar, and like.
What?
And there's a bit where he's like hunting them through the house, and it's a music video, and he's singing and like doing all these wacky guitar moves and stuff with a drill on the end, and then he kills one of them.
That sounds so great.
Yeah, it really is. But like the first, it's not a long film, it's like 80 minutes long. This is on Amazon, by the way, so like you can actually watch it. It's like an hour of nothing much at all happening. And then it just goes like from zero to awesome, and like the last 20 minutes are just fucking brilliant. So that's my recommendation. Instead of watching Corbin or Elias wrestle, just watch like the last 20 minutes of Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Right. Anyway, what I don't understand is that movie sounds amazing. I might go watch
Does.
that.
You should definitely do that.
Yeah. But what I don't understand, right? Elias comes out with his guitar, hits Corbin over the back with a guitar, and then Corbin just makes a comeback and puts heat on Elias. Like, surely once you've had the guitar over your back, you're done. That's the end.
It's
Why do you have a whole match afterwards?
the acoustic equalizer.
Ah, oh, so good.
Yeah, that should have been nearer the finish, really, I guess. I don't remember this at all.
Yeah, it wasn't. There's nothing to remember. It was
The
pointless.
finish was a roll-up, wasn't
I don't know. I honestly don't remember.
Okay. After that was Becky and Shayna, and we've already talked about that.
Yeah, I thought, other than the finish, it was an okay match. You can tell they realized this is not going to be. They worked it as if this was the first match in the series, as opposed to a big time goal.
Yeah, I again, my review really let me down here because I wrote one sentence about this match. Which I feel like that is like an all-time record for me. So I'm usually quite wordsy, and yeah, it was literally a sentence that said this was fine, but the finish sucked. And that was it.
Fair. I think that sums it up perfectly, though.
So yeah, I have nothing more to say because that was everything. After that was Sami Zayn and Daniel Bryan. And this is the point where I got really upset with them having guardrails because Daniel Bryan does a topa and he goes straight into the wall, like straight into the guardrail, which doesn't need to be there.
It was nasty. It was a nasty tope. I liked this more than the other stuff so far,
Yeah.
just because there's more people around, so there's more to do. Daniel Bryan is like maybe the best wrestler of all time. He can make anything work. Fun little TV match almost.
Yeah, I probably had this at match of the night for night one.
Not for me, but it's up there.
Yeah, I basically all the matches were the same on my ratings, so yeah, I think it was all right. After that was the ladder match, which we've already talked about ladder match.
Yeah, I liked it. You hate the finish.
I hate the finish and I hate the tropey stuff that they did in the match before that. For bumps, it was probably the best match.
I think the issue with it was this was really worked like there was a crowd because you did the slow climb, you did the
Why is
everybody
it?
down spot.
Like people who do the slow climb, what are you doing?
I think it can work if you've got a hot crowd because it's building the tension and the excitement, but just normally it just looks really silly.
I feel it's a stupid trope and it just needs to go away because it's never good. Although if you look at a lot of the early ladder matches, they all do slow climbing. But they do it too early as well. Like you shouldn't be doing that slow climb if a dude's been like, wrecked. Like he's gone through a table or something and it's like here's his heroic return to the match with everyone else down and he tries to go climb and you're rooting for him. You save it for that. You don't do it all the time because that's stupid.
Yeah. Like when I think of good slow climbs, I think of like, the Undertaker Jeff Hardy ladder match.
No.
Okay. There's a very famous Undertaker Jeff Hardy ladder match from like 2000 or something.
Oh, is that yeah? Is that the oh? Is it Raw or something? And
Yeah.
I've seen that. I remember
Climb the ladder, kid, make yourself famous. So Jeff Hardy, has gone through hell. Somehow is slowly climbing the ladder, maybe about to become WWF champion. JR has an iconic call. The crowd is going nuts. That's the kind of moment where you need the slow climb.
You need
I
to
think
save
you're
it for
right.
those occasions, but like they were doing it all the way through this match, and it's just why? What are you doing?
Yeah.
And these are experienced professional wrestlers. All three of these guys should know better based on what their experience levels are. But
But they're all people that have spent most of their time in that system.
yeah, I
So
was about to say that the system teaches them a certain way, and I don't think it's as good at all, which is why they don't produce that many talents, like
yeah.
internally, why they have to bring people in and then teach them how to do it, which is, I think it's a pretty damning indictment of the Performance Center and WWE as trainers in particular, that they just don't know how to train people, how to wrestle, and they need to rely on the scene as a whole to produce talents. Like if the scene is completely crippled by this corona outbreak and everything just kind of goes away for a while, WWE are not going to have any kind of feeder system. because they're going to have to train people themselves and they're not good at it.
No, the performance center, we've talked about this once before, I remember. The performance center is a complete waste of time. What really helped them was their change in the way they were hiring, going from hiring the bodybuilders to hiring the workers. That's
yeah.
what really benefited them, not building this massive gym.
It was what was the signing that made the difference? I guess it would have been like Finn Balor,
Well,
probably. Well, maybe
so
Pac, maybe even Pac before that, because they signed him and he was the only one that got that was any good, so they put the belt on him in NXT and like pushed him and pushed him and pushed him, because like who else are they gonna push? Sami Zayn, maybe? Maybe he was the guy that when he came in, it was like he's much better than everything that we've got.
So I think you can really trace this back to Punk and Brian, Daniel Bryan. They became the hottest stars in the company at the time, at their times. And so that people internally, people started to realize, okay, maybe we'll sign a Tyler Black, maybe we'll sign a Pac or a El Generico.
I mean, you can't see Johnny Gargano being there if it wasn't for the breakthroughs that Bryan made in particular.
Yeah,
Like
exactly.
You'd never see him in that company. He's what, 5'8", 5'9"? He's tiny.
Yeah.
Although you could argue that Eddie Guerrero is sort of the same kind of height, and they've done this before, but they also tried to steer away from it and failed.
Yeah, because after Eddie, they went back to bigger guys.
Yeah, they had a bit
I
of
feel
success.
Like.
They had like the Batista, Orton, Cena, so they were getting the big guys who were good again, and then you just can't keep producing those kind of talents because there's not that many of them. Whereas like
Yeah.
little guys who are good at wrestling is like a permanent thing because of the athleticism involved.
They're like a dime a dozen. You can get. I can open my door right now and there'll be five little guys that can wrestle really good.
Yeah. That's what you always see in the indies. That's why like really, really talented big men are worth so much money to the company, because they're so
They're
rare
rare.
now.
Yeah. What was after the ladder match? Was
It
it
was
title match?
No, it was Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins.
Oh, I didn't like this.
I don't like Seth Rollins. I think he's the most overrated guy in wrestling. I feel like in my review, I basically said he can't even run the ropes right. And once you've got to the point where you start nitpicking about his work, there's so many holes in it, it's not even funny.
Yeah, he's never, like, I don't have the very obvious, this is why I don't like him. His matches just never, there was a period in, like, I want to say 2017, where he was having really, really good mid-card matches. But apart from that, I don't think I've ever really enjoyed a Seth Rollins match.
He's fine. He's fine. That's my take on him.
Yeah. He has a ceiling of pretty good.
I think he was great in... he was in a triple threat at the Royal Rumble. I can't remember what year it was, but it was with...
2015. I know the one.
Yeah, Brock and Cena. And he was great in that match. That's arguably the best match he's ever had. And that's because he was in there with guys that could just elevate what he did and make it look better. And the singles matches that he's had with Lesnar are nowhere near as good as that. Like Lesnar is the kind of guy who is very good at a 5 minute sprint now. That's the Lesnar match. It's like 5-7 minutes long and that's all you're going to get out of him, which is fine. It's enjoyable to me. But you can't even, like Seth couldn't even have that match with him. It was just nothing match.
Yeah, I think Seth is the kind of guy where he needs to be in there with someone better than him. And Owens is better than him.
Yeah.
But I think just the circumstances of this match and the weird sort of DQ, okay, let's do a no DQ match, which, again, just feels like a TV thing, not a big WrestleMania.
I think if they'd done that in front of a crowd, it wouldn't have got a good reception.
No. I'm so cynical about this company. When they did the DQ, I was just like, okay, that's just the match then.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
So there was no feeling of, oh, well, obviously they're going to do a no DQ. Right, cool. What's next?
Yeah, I legitimately thought, because I basically finished the write-up on it and give it a rating and everything, and then it restarted, and I was like, oh, well, okay. Yeah, you're right. The level of cynicism is extremely high around WWE, and they've brought it on themselves. After that was Goldberg and Braun, which there's not really anything to say about it. There was like four moves in the match, wasn't there?
Yeah, something like that. It was a complete waste of time.
It feels really weird that the opportunity was there to put Braun over Lesnar, which they didn't do because they thought Lesnar and Reigns was the match, which it wasn't, and was dreadful every time. But there was a chance there to put Braun over and put him over strong and make him into like a proper big top guy in the company. And they fucked it and had him. They basically got squashed by Lesnar. So it's weird that like his actual big first run is going to come off an empty building squash over Goldberg.
Where he wasn't even supposed to be the guy.
Yeah, he wasn't even supposed to be the guy.
He was filling in for someone else.
So yeah, they've...
It's
weird to me. It's very weird to me that Vince has dropped the ball on a guy like Braun, who is clearly like his guy. Like, why have you like cut the legs off your own guy? Like, this is all you. You pushed him before he was ready to even be on the main roster. He was useless for about a year and a half, and he just kept learning and getting better and better and better, and then you cut his legs off.
I think with Braun, they kind of see him as more of a Big Show type, of someone you can stick in the main event and be believable, but also just in the mid-card doing wacky bollocks and no one will care.
Yeah, I can see that point.
And Big Show's a guy that never really... Like, he had world title runs, but he never had proper main event runs. And I think Braun is going to be the same, where he'll probably win a couple titles like this, but he'll never be pushed as the guy.
Yeah, I mean, they could have done it, but also they're going to find it hard to get people to work with him because of the whole, like, he's so big. Like, how do you get heat? You have to do it with like multiple people, and they've already done that a load, and it's boring, and yeah.
But I think he can do just the, he's the big strong face that, you know, just wrecks through people. Just the cool badass. I think that can work.
Yeah. They should be able to do more with him than they are. And I think it stems to a lack of creativity that they can't find anything to do.
Yeah. Or it's they've pigeonholed people into specific roles. And if they get more over than the role they've planned for them,
they don't know what to do.
They're not going to do anything. Yeah.
Yeah, you, in that company, you're just one thing. And if you have potential to do more than one thing, they don't know what to do with you. So you get pigeonholed into that one thing.
With one or two slight exceptions, when you're like someone like Daniel Bryan, best of all time.
Yeah, but he's had to force it as well just to get to do different things.
Yeah. Yeah. What was next? I don't know what was next. Oh my God. Right. Okay. We've been talking around this the whole time. Why didn't you like the Boneyard match?
Because it wasn't very good. So hang on. Let me explain this in a little bit more detail. I see what they were going for, but what they're going for here is like a B movie, and WWE, if there's one thing they approved consistently, is that they don't know how to shoot films.
Yeah.
And even worse is trying to shoot films in-house, because let's face it, they have no idea what they're doing. So everything about this match was, I guess I can call this one a match. The one on night two, the Firefly Funhouse, that's not a match. That was a video package. This was a match. But yeah, I just don't. I find anything they do that attempts to be cinematic, I find it embarrassing because they don't know what they're doing. So if you're treating this as a wrestling match, it's not a good wrestling match. And if you're treating it as a movie, it's not a good movie. So what is it? I found it, a lot of it, unintentionally funny. I was laughing at a lot of it, but not because it was supposed to be funny, I don't think.
Sure. So if it wasn't for the Firefly Funhouse on night two, I would be defending this match a lot stronger than I'm going to. I think after an entire show of just doing the same old, it was very, very exciting to see them try something different and a bit more unique. And like, it was, it felt like an attempt at doing a shitty B movie. And I agree it didn't work as a B movie, but I think because it was so different and so outside of the box, it landed quite well with a lot of people. Like we've been saying, this is not a very creative company. So when they do something creative, it really stands out.
I feel this was very, very highly divisive. Because you had people, because you either love this or hate it. There's like nothing in between.
Yeah. I really, really liked it. And like I said, I think what happened is this was a really, really good idea. And then the Firefly Funhouse sort of perfected the execution of the idea.
Yeah, that was a completely different beast. And I would like to talk about that in depth. So we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
This Boneyard, I really, really enjoyed. I could watch again.
I feel like they went too far outside their own wheelhouse. And if they were going to do that, they should have brought somebody in who could actually film it for them. Because they just didn't seem to know what they were doing, is my argument. They could have made this absolutely fantastic. And if they'd actually shot it properly, if they'd actually done like a good job of shooting it and not just shot it like a wrestling match in the woods, then I could have seen myself praising it. Because I do like that they did something different. I just didn't think they executed it properly. So instead of being something that could have been like an all-time great thing that WWE had done, it's something that has ended up being highly divisive, and it's highly divisive because a lot of people think it's just rubbish, like me. I thought it was rubbish.
Yeah, I think it will be the most memorable thing coming out of this show, whether that's for good or bad reasons, I think is more of a time thing. It might turn out that, you know, in a couple years, people who don't like it are sort of the outlier. It might also be that in a couple of years, the sort of specialness of it fades away and people don't enjoy it.
They're going to do this a lot, aren't they? Because
they'll probably try this again. They will almost definitely try this at least one more time, if not multiple times. Especially if they're going to have to keep running shows in front of no fans. They might just keep doing stuff like this.
Yeah. Which, you know, they might actually get better at it, which I'd be fine with that. Honestly, I would be fine with it if they wanted to do movies. But they need to get some advice on it for starters, because, yeah. If they wanted to do this more and make it better, then, yeah, I'd be for that. That's fine. Make wrestling. Right. Wrestling can be anything.
Yeah, just do something more interesting than what you've been doing.
Yeah. Are you done with the Boneyard? Can we move on to night two?
Yeah, let's move on to night two. I think we'll come back to the Boneyard when we talk about Firefly Funhouse, but.
So night two, you got Liv and Natalia was the pre-show. That was fine.
Fine. I'm a big fan of Liv Morgan, but it was a fine match.
Then you had the NXT Women's Championship with Charlotte and Rhea Ripley. I thought this was hands down, like night and day, far, far superior to anything on night one, and easily the best wrestling match of the weekend.
By far. They both worked really, really snug. They told an effective story with Charlotte going after the leg. We criticize leg matches all the time. This actually worked.
Look, my main problem with the leg match, and it would have been the same with this, if they'd gone from leg match for like two-thirds of it to something else at the end, I would have hated it. But they didn't. They did leg match, leg match, leg match, leg match, finish. And the finish was on the leg. That you just can't ask for anything more. If you like that degree of psychology in your professional wrestling, you can't ask for anything more than that.
Yeah. And I think Rhea sold it really, really well. You could argue maybe she oversold it a little bit, but considering it was the finish, I think it worked. If she had somehow made a comeback and, you know, won, then I'd go, okay, maybe she sold the leg a bit too much.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But considering, you know, it was a figure eight is the finish, I can sort of understand. It worked really, really well. I understand why Charlotte won, because you want to stick her on NXT, but I think you can do that. You can stick her on NXT while still having Rhea win, because I think she had some real momentum behind her. And
lost the plot on Rhea after. So they got her over huge Survivor Series weekend, but they did a much better job on NXT than they did on the main roster.
Yeah.
And then there was a point after that, there was a window of opportunity, and that window of opportunity has now passed. And they haven't done anything with her. I don't know if that's just because they're locked into a long-term storyline of what they wanted to do with her in terms of NXT, but I guess in a way they have put her over, because they've had her lose to somebody off the main roster for the title. She hasn't lost it to somebody else in development, because she's above those people. So in a way, her losing to Charlotte is actually a positive for her, because everybody loses to Charlotte.
Yeah, but I think two things. I think first of all, after she won the title, there was a very clear issue. She very much seemed like the kind of person that works better chasing a title as opposed to being the champion. There was a bit of a momentum stall there. But again, I don't know if that's just because by that point they knew Charlotte was the match, and so they were just sort of in a holding pattern for a couple months. But that's my first point. But I also think having her lose to Charlotte, yeah, I understand your point of, look, this is like losing to John Cena or The Rock or something. Yeah. Everyone does.
That's what they built Charlotte up as. Like, they had Asuka lose the streak to her. It's like she is the pinnacle of women's wrestling at the moment. That's just what she is. And if you look at her output, I'd argue there's a very good reason for that. She seems to care more. She seems to put more into what she does. And you can hate her for doing it, but it doesn't change that she's the best at what she does. So, like, that's why she's the top person.
I think she also gets more opportunities to actually really, really show out compared to the rest.
Yeah, this is true.
But equally, she makes the most of those opportunities, so I can't complain too much.
Yeah, I don't feel like you can argue with her. You can't. If somebody's out there saying Charlotte Flair's not good, I would say you're wrong, because she is. So that's not. And also the whole, like, oh, she keeps winning argument. It, like, well, somebody has to be the top dog. Otherwise, you need to build somebody up as the man. Otherwise, you can't get anyone else over, if that makes sense. Like, Charlotte being the person who keeps winning means that you have to, therefore, beat her convincingly to actually get over. And there can only be one of those persons per generation. That's the way it works. You couldn't have people just randomly beating Hogan in the mid-80s, because that way, like, his aura wouldn't have been the same. And it was the same with Cena. And it'll be the same with everyone who is the guy throughout history, because you need that one person. And if they've picked Charlotte as that one person, I think it's the right decision. So I can't argue with this outcome.
I think especially the way they've booked historically, they always have an ace, and Charlotte is just the ace of the women's division right now.
And I think it was close, but like when they were starting out, it was close between whether it was going to be her or Sasha Banks. And the reason why it's not Sasha Banks is because Sasha keeps getting hurt.
Yeah.
And they've got to the point where they're like, we can't rely on her because she keeps getting hurt. She's great in the ring. Nobody's saying that she isn't great in the ring, but Sasha Banks keeps getting hurt. And she got hurt recently again, and Charlotte just doesn't get hurt. Or if she does, she can work through it. And that's the difference.
I can't think of a time she's been out injured, really.
I think she just works through it.
Maybe.
It's genetics, isn't it?
But genetics. I think I'm hoping this isn't the end of the Rhea Charlotte story. Because if it is, then we've got a real problem, because Rhea is clearly on the level.
I think they need to give him a bit of space to tell this one. And I think the next match needs to be a Rhea goes away, does something else, and then comes back stronger.
Yeah. I think I don't want, like a rematch in a month or whatever, but I think you have to come back to this. Otherwise, Rhea just looks like another woman on the roster as opposed to a potential star.
You need Rhea to get rehab victories, but then when you bring her back to Charlotte, she has to have a reason for coming back to her. She needs to build herself up to the point where it's like, okay, I learned from last time. I'm back, and I'm going to beat you this time. And she doesn't necessarily need to beat her the second time. She just needs to win at some point. Otherwise, you end up being a dweeb like, Hirooki Goto. It's like you have to win eventually, but it doesn't have to be the second match. It doesn't even have to be the third match, but there has to be a reason for her losing. And the reason this time was Charlotte was technically the better wrestler, because she went after the body part and established that as the match. So that's why she lost. And if you're doing it from a sports point of view, you can say, well, Rhea was hurt in that match. She was hurt by Charlotte, but she was hurt, and that's why she didn't win. But you have to have a logical reason for her losing to keep her coming back. But you can keep her coming back. And they can stretch this out for a year or two if they wanted to.
I think you just have to be careful to not stretch it out too much, because then...
That's the thing. It's really hard to know where that line is drawn. It's like the whole Star Volta thing, which now will probably never have its final chapter. It's like it's really hard to judge where to do that line. But if the guy, whoever is challenging, keeps getting the reactions and people keep believing in them, you can keep dragging it out. It's when people stop believing. If people think, oh, it's this guy again, this chump, you're never going to win, then you've got a problem. It's all about the booking, and it's very difficult to do. But like, if they do it right, they can do it for a long time.
Yeah, I think with modern WWE, there's a much shorter amount of time you can tell this kind of a story. Like, just because the fan base isn't going to be on board for the whole time,
Yeah.
I feel like you can't tell like a multi-year Star Wars type story between these two.
I
This
think you
is a
can. I think you can, but it's a case of you have to take her away from it, because the trouble with WWE is they have like a series of matches, and it's all like 3, 4 months, and you've had the whole series, or you go from WrestleMania to SummerSlam, because that's what they do in these like 4 month booking arcs, and maybe the two people have like four matches together over that arc, and then the payoff is the end of it at SummerSlam, and then they just move on to something else. I don't think you can do that. You need to plan things better, so like it's over a longer period of time, and there's things in between, because you don't need to have them wrestle each other like 3 shows in a row. You just don't need to do that, but that's what they
No,
keep doing.
I would do the rematch at SummerSlam, but then I would maybe have that be the last match. Have Rhea, in the meantime, learn from her mistakes, get some big rehab wins, and then come back against Charlotte and beat her there. That's the kind of thing where I'm saying, well, yeah, you only need to do maybe one or two more matches. But you can do those over a slightly longer period of time. I don't think you should do it over years. I think that's a bit too far.
Yeah, no, I think you can. I think you can.
Yeah.
But like,
Right.
it depends how you do it.
Cool. All right. Should we just go straight to the next match then? I think we talked through most of what we need to on Rio Charlotte.
Aleister Black versus Bobby Lashley.
It was a match. Like, there's no story going into this. There was no.
I think they just wanted Aleister Black to win.
I think what it was, they just wanted a win for Aleister Black. And
That's what I
so
just
Lana
said.
was off filming a movie. But also, see, I'm adding, it's a yes and on,
Okay, carry
yes
on.
and. Lana was also off filming a movie, and because of this corona thing, that's been put on hold. So they just had access to her and Bobby. So they were just like, you know what, let's just put them in a match. This was another match where they worked surprisingly stiff.
Yeah, I thought the work was fine. I was going okay on the rating until the finish, where so Bobby Lashley's going for a spear. So he's all ducked down in spear position, and then he just stands straight up, so like Aleister Black can kick his head off. It's like, why have you stood up?
Yeah, it was a bit, yeah. I think it was a nice idea, but again, execution. And again, you could have filmed this multiple times so that you have no excuse for there being poor execution.
Maybe they tried it and tried like a low version of it, and it just didn't look right, and they just did it again with a like they did. But yeah, the only other
Mean,
talking point from that match is that Aleister Black has spikes on his kick pads, and it's like, surely that's not legal.
if it's part of your gear, maybe it is.
I don't know. I feel like it's creating that extra bit of abrasion that I guess the referee has to check it when he gets into the ring from a like a reasoning point of view, and if he thinks it's fine, like, oh no, these are soft spikes, these are fine.
Yeah, I was
It's
about to say,
cosmetic.
if they're like, made of the same material as kick pads, then I can sort of see it. But if they're a bit harder, then obviously, yeah, there's an
There's
issue
no
there.
way he could use that in MMA.
No. You know what? I'd like to think the good referees at WWE would have properly vetted his gear.
Yeah, they've done a fine job, I'm sure, in
Yeah.
checking that everything was above board.
Of course.
So after that match was Otis and Dolph Ziggler. I fully thought they were going to do a heel turn.
Of
So
who?
Mandy.
Oh, no, don't say that.
I
This is.
fully expected that. That's WWE
No.
to a T, that is.
Yeah, well, they sort of did in the. I don't know, I'm assuming you haven't been following the build of
Of
this.
course not. I
Right.
saw
So
the video
basically,
package they put on
yeah.
beforehand with the weird hacker thing.
So the basic idea was Mandy was being a heel at one point, and this is almost like her face turn. Because she thought Otis did, like, this whole text message bollocks. You know, I'm so invested in this story for some reason. It just weirdly worked. And I was just happy to see a good ending and not a heel turn.
Yeah, just, of course, heel turn would have been a Dolph Ziggler push, which
no one wants that. No one wants that. You know, weirdly, this was Dolph Ziggler's first ever singles match at WrestleMania.
Really?
Yeah. Considering he's been in that company for like
ever
a decade.
It's a lot longer than that, I think. Because he was in the Spirit Squad.
Yeah, and he was with Kevin White before that.
Yeah.
Shoot. Like 2 decades.
He's been there like nearly 20 years.
Wow. You know.
The best thing about this match is it got me my my best tweet of the weekend with the picture of Otis carrying Mandy afterwards, and I just said, like, off to the boneyard, and it was like 250 likes.
Nice. I did really well with the
The Marge Simpson in front of the curtain one. I retweeted that. That was good content.
Yeah, that was good. That was a good tweet. I'm still getting notifications on that. That was real money. That
peak Akil.
Yeah, it's beautiful. What was next?
After I did it off. Oh, last man standing. Jesus.
Oh.
The best part of this match is when Randy Orton attempted to recreate Chris Benoit's suicide.
Yeah, it was, again, considering you filmed this beforehand, why did no one think, you know what, this is a bad idea? A couple weeks after a major documentary on this story, maybe we shouldn't try and recreate this.
If he'd left like a half-empty bottle of wine next to him and just left him hanging there, I think I might have had to switch the feed off.
Do you think, because it must be that for whatever reason, they just didn't even make the connection.
I assume so, yeah. I assume they just didn't even realise.
Which that is more worrying than anything. Purpose.
But like, but when... that's...
Sorry, go ahead.
But it being pre-taped, surely this goes via someone and they look at it and go, that's a little on the nose. Let's take that out of there. But nope.
Yeah. I think it's even more worrying that no one made the connection than if they just sort of were like, no one else will notice.
It is worrying. I found that. It staggered me, honestly, that made it in. But
this whole match was a waste of time.
Oh, absolutely. It shouldn't have been Last Man Standing. That was a dumb idea. It should have been just a quick Randy gets his comeuppance match that doesn't expose Edge, but to a really long match, which he didn't need to be in. It was 37 minutes, I think.
Yeah, but they didn't even...
longer.
It was 37 minutes, but they didn't even really do anything. They just sort of walked through the PC, a couple clubbing blows, and then that whole section on the truck. That was basically the match. And, you know, it's not like, you know, Edge worked a really tough 40-minute match. He just did a walking brawl, really. I wonder if Edge can bump less than they realised. And that's why the match was the way it was.
That's conceivable, yeah.
Because
just have it as a short match. Short match, no DQ, smacks him with a concerto. That's the end of it.
Yeah, I don't know. Going into this, I thought, you know what? Orton's a good, safe hand. He's going to have, you know, it'll be weird to have a last man standing match in front of no crowd, but they'll do something interesting, and they did something.
Yeah. It was unbelievably boring. It was the worst thing on the entire weekend. Which, if you'd have told me that beforehand, oh, that Edge is going to have the worst match, I would have been shocked because this is the kind of thing where they deliberately try and super protect the guy that is the big draw, even if they have to do smoke and mirrors and all sorts to make that happen. That's in a normal match, like with Sting and Triple H. They threw so much booking at that match because they wanted Sting to look fine, you know? They didn't want it to fall completely on its face. And I assume this is their version of doing that here, but they just failed.
I think they got in their way too much and they thought we need smoke and mirrors in this. And I reckon with a crowd, this might have been a bit more interesting. But just because even weirdly, the commentary was really, really quiet as well. Like, and you could almost not hear it at points, or they just weren't
I
talking at
couldn't
points.
hear it at all, but then I
So.
wasn't really listening to commentary for the show, so
This was the match where halfway through I just gave up trying to listen to commentary. But they just were almost silent for most of it. And I think that made things really, really weird as well. If you had, a hot crowd behind it, or you had commentary just going crazy of, oh my God, what are they doing? Blah, blah, blah. Then it might add some more energy to the match and make it more interesting.
yeah, I
But
think
I think.
Ian was saying that they were doing it in like an oh my God, I hope Edge is okay muted
It
commentary,
was the
which
Owen voice.
yeah, I don't like the Owen voice.
Yeah,
It's
I
completely
think.
inappropriate.
Yeah, but it was the sort of more muted voice, and it just didn't, it didn't fit the match, and I think that hurt him a lot more than just the fact that they didn't do anything.
Yeah, I just didn't like it at all. Essentially, the biggest problem it had is it was just too long. They could have condensed a lot of that down, and like with the tour of the building, it's like I kind of appreciated them doing that, but at the same time, it was all too long. There was too much going on. They spent too long in each location, and it just didn't need to be that long. They could have cut that in half. It still would have been boring, but it would have been half of that, and that would have been easier to deal with. I would have rather it was 10 minutes tops, which I know you'd lose the sense of epic by doing a 10-minute match, but the dude's been away for like however many years it's been, like 15 years or something? No, 9 years. 9 years, that's the
Nine
number.
years.
Yeah, so he's been away for a long time, and you can kind of build the match off that, and it doesn't need to be long, is my take.
I think I sort of agree with you. I think it could be longer than 10 minutes. I think you could push 15. But if it was shorter, I think this would be the kind of match where we just don't have a lot to say on it, as opposed to maybe the worst match of, or easily the worst match of the weekend. Not
Yeah,
even maybe.
but which is worse from a perspective where you were looking forward to Edge coming back, and this is what you got.
Yeah, but I think given the circumstances, if it was just a nothing match, that would be, I think people would be a lot more forgiving and just be like, oh, it's cool to see Edge back. But the fact that they had a terrible, terrible match, I think hurts a lot of the goodwill for Edge going forward.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is worse for him than
Sorry.
them having like a nothing match. A nothing match, I think, would have been fine because he can kind of coast by on his comeback. Whereas having this match, it's like, well, the hell's he going to do now?
And I was just about to say, what do they do with Edge now? Because I assume he's working a Brock type schedule where it's, a couple shows a month. Sorry, a couple shows a year. But like, I don't know. Who even won? I legitimately don't know who won the match.
What, Edge?
Did he? Okay,
Yeah,
good.
he hit the he cried and hit the concerto on
Oh
radio.
yeah. He did the why am I so violent face.
Yeah. I'm just skimming through Raw to see if there's anything about Edge, and he wasn't on it, so...
Okay. Just as a slight tangent, is Shawn Michaels one of the worst road agents of all time?
Yeah, okay.
It's good that we're in agreement of that. Although apparently he does a lot in NXT UK, and like
that explains a lot.
But are they doing Why Am I So Violent faces?
They did two main events where Joe Coffey went toe to toe with the an outstanding champion.
Oh yeah. Shawn Michaels sucks.
Yeah, it's a shame because like he was really good at wrestling, but like his concept of what wrestling is. Is not 2020.
I think, yeah, I think he's trying to make everyone wrestle like he did, and even at his best, he had people that didn't like him.
Yeah, he was a generational talent. I don't begrudge him that. Like, he was an incredible professional wrestler. He was even better when he was like just absolutely fucked up on drugs all the time and was a complete jerk. He was still having 5-star matches regularly. But you can't really take that mentality and try and push it onto people who aren't that skillful. And that's, yeah. He's seen the athleticism of people and comparing that to his own athleticism. But that's not what the issue is. It's all about how your mind works and how capable you are of putting a match together. And scripting a match for someone is not the same as coming up with the concepts yourself and then living it. It's completely different.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
So next was... Oh, do you want to talk about the Gronk winning the 24/7 title or just...
No.
No, okay.
I'm upset you even acknowledged him. Well, Although I sort of liked his outfit.
I think there were too many people in the building when he won.
Yeah, maybe.
So I was like, there's no social distancing here. There's like a bunch of guys come running after Mojo Rawley, who has got coronavirus. So probably not a good idea. So the next match was the tag titles with Street Profits against Garza and Austin Theory.
What a weird.
I was telling Rob last night, it might have been after the show, I said, like, if you put money on Austin Theory being on the WrestleMania card a year ago, you'd have made a fortune.
Yeah.
Because he was kind of in the system because he was in Evolve, but like there was no way he was a year away from being on WrestleMania. And here he is, Austin Theory.
Yeah. This is a match, like I have nothing to say about the actual match.
Oh no.
But just, no, this is the kind of thing where, you know, in 5 or 10 years, people are going to be looking back on this and have no idea how it came together. It'll be like when people go through the war cards and see these random trios matches. That's the kind of thing people are going to look on this tag match as, because it just makes no sense. Why is Austin Theory there? Why is he tagging with Angel Garza?
This is very much
who are the Street Profits? Yeah. So weird. So weird.
Anyway, yeah, that was over. And then they had Zelina attack. I can't remember who she attacked. It was one of the Street Profits. Probably Montez Ford.
Yeah, I assume it was Ford because that would make the most sense.
And then Bianca Belair ran in and like took her out afterwards. And like, I love Bianca Belair. I think she's probably the best talent they've produced.
Yeah, by far.
In any of their divisions for a while. But this is probably not how you'd want to introduce her to the main roster.
I think it can work because obviously Bianca and Ford have a lot of chemistry. You'd hope so because they're married. So I think to introduce her with an act that is already a little bit over, I sort of see. But you want to be careful not to pigeonhole her as the Street Profits manager, because her ceiling is so much higher than that.
Yeah, you don't want to Shaniqua her.
Oh, what a callback. She was the Basham's manager, right?
Yeah.
Ah, Shaniqua. Wow.
Well, I feel like she was put in as a manager because she sucked in the ring.
Whereas, yeah.
But there is a danger of like you getting pigeonholed in that spot just because she's big and powerful and there's only so many people you can kind of put her in as a wrestler against.
Yeah. Sorry, were the Bashams good? I'm just thinking about that now. Were they good?
No.
Okay.
They were very Ohio Valley, and like everyone that came out of Ohio Valley was basically the same.
Yeah, because I was like, probably like 6 or 7 when the Bashams were around, so I don't remember.
Yeah, they were fine. Like everyone that came out of Ohio Valley was like a 2.5-star wrestler, and it was up to WWE to kind of like mold them into something else.
I see. Anyway,
they were like creator rest. They all came up like blank. Jim Cornette's Wrestle Factory, where he just builds these very basic guys and then just unleash them on the main roster with the same level of talent.
I see. As you can see, there's a lot to talk about with this match.
I didn't want to talk about it at all. I'm surprised we found so much to talk about. After that was the SmackDown Women's Championship with Bayley, Sasha, Lacey Evans, Tamina, and Naomi. This was all right.
Yeah, I think if you were really invested in the Sasha Bayley story, I think this was really good. I'm not super invested in that story, so it was fine. I thought it was weird that I forgot there was an elimination. So I thought it was weird that so much of the match was built around Tamina. But I think it made sense that you eliminate her and then just do the rest of the match. It was fine.
The biggest problem with this is they're portraying Bayley and Sasha as complex heels. And the babyface that they decided to put in there up against this was Lacey Evans.
Yeah.
Which Lacey Evans... I suspect not even in her own head is a massive baby face. Like, she's a heel. She's just a big, big, tall, powerful jerk who, like, nobody likes. Like, why is she a baby face? They even started her off as a heel, which was fine. And then they've somehow decided that she'd be better positioned as a face.
I can see why they would think she's a face. Because she's a tall, attractive, blonde woman with a military background. So I can see them going, okay, that's obviously a face. But I think in reality, she's very, very dislikable. And I think she's a pretty good heel, really.
Mm-hmm.
Her biggest issue for a while was that she just couldn't really work. And she's come on leaps and bounds.
Oh, yeah, she's way better in the ring. Like, all that potential that they saw in her is actually coming through.
Yeah.
But she's not a babyface.
No. I think what helped with her is she was just wrestling Natalya every single night. And as much as I dislike Natalya, she's someone that can help people get better.
Yeah, she's very good at the basics. Natalya, she's never gotten above a certain level, but like when it comes to the basics, she's fine on everything. And they should put more like upcoming kids in with her just to learn. There's not that many wrestlers that they have that they can do that with. I guess Mercedes Martinez, they've signed her so they can just put whoever they've got in development in with Mercedes every night and they'll just get better.
Yeah, and I think Natalya is sort of the main roster version of that, where once you've brought someone on to Raw or SmackDown because you think they are very, very close to reaching their potential, you stick them in with Natalya for a month and then they'll come out pretty competent.
Yeah, I mean, she has improved a great deal, Lacey. I think the biggest problem that Lacey has outside of her alignment, which is booking, not her, is that she's overly ambitious and she's trying to do things that are physically difficult, which I understand why she's doing it, because she wants to stand out. And once she gets that stuff down, then she's going to be actually good. But attempting it just makes her look clumsy at the moment. She needs to get the reps in training, do it in on house shows where no one's paying attention, although at the moment there are no house shows. Can see that point, but she needs to get the reps in on those moves before she's putting them in front of a crowd. And I think the idea behind it is to try and surprise people with what she can do, but all she's doing is looking not ready for the spot that she's in.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything you said. I think she had that issue more so early on. I feel like now she's taken out a lot. She's relying a bit more on just fundamentals, as opposed to trying to do the big, high flying, flashy
She's doing
stuff.
less of that now, which I think is the right way to go.
And I think, with a couple more months, maybe a year of practice, she'll be able to do that stuff and be able to bring it into her moveset. But right now, I think you're right. She needs to sort of focus a bit more on just fundamentals.
Yeah, and her fundamentals are getting a lot better. Like her strikes are really good, which I didn't think I'd be saying that about her. But like this is one of those cases where WWE saw something in her that nobody else did, and they were right. And their hit rate isn't fantastic or anything, but they are a wrestling company, and it's their job to identify talents when they're younger, and they clearly saw what nobody else saw in her early. And they were right. So fair play to them.
Maybe she got pushed a bit too quickly at
Oh,
first,
yeah.
but I think now she's sort of where she should be.
Yeah, in another year, I expect we won't even be thinking about her as like somebody who we thought was bad. It's like, yeah, Lacey Evans is really good. She's got the tools.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Although Tamina's always been shit. That's flat out say that she
Yeah,
sucks.
but I think Tamina's sort of never even really tried. Like, I never. Lacey Evans seems like she's trying to get better. Tamina almost feels like she just is what she is and she's not going to do anything more.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't just got rid of her. I know that
It's
she has
the
that,
last name.
yeah. But they've got rid of people with famous last names before.
Yeah, but I reckon Snooker is a bit more complicated because of the whole he definitely murdered that woman thing.
Yeah, but Vince already covered that up. Like, how much more does he owe the family?
True. Although, equally, it's not like, Tamina's on every show. I feel like this is the first time I've seen her wrestle in
I
like
feel
a
like
year.
her being paid is sufficient.
Yeah.
She doesn't need to be in front of a crowd. Well, not even a crowd, in front of a camera.
I don't have anything more to say on Tamina.
Okay. Do you want to do Firefly Funhouse, or do you want to talk real quick about Brock and Drew and then come back to it?
I think let's do Brock and Drew because Firefly Funhouse works better as the ending.
It's a culmination.
So, yeah. So Brock and Drew, I weirdly liked a lot more than most people.
Yeah, I remember you saying something in the chat about how much you liked it, and I was like, I thought it was fine. I think the problem that you've got here is it's the same as you saying like Shayna Baszler, they didn't want us to win in front of no people, but here they kind of painted themselves into a corner and had to have Drew win in front of no people, and it just didn't feel important.
Yeah, I agree with you there. The reason, and I will just say, when I first saw it, I had it at like 4 stars.
I think that's a little extreme.
I rewatched it. I'm not at 4 stars, but I still liked what they did. I think it just worked because they were really stiff. See, the difference between this and Braun Goldberg, which I think is the obvious comparison, is there was a lot more energy in this match, it felt like to me. And that goes a long way with me. Just when it feels like people are trying.
That and this match had a super worker in it, which the other match is just two guys doing power moves.
That's exactly it. You've got Brock, who I think we're both in agreement that Brock is really, really good.
The only reason people don't like Brock Lesnar is because he doesn't work most of the time. And I'm like, well, that is actually why I like him. Because he's not on all these shit shows. Brock Lesnar is on every show I watch, though, because I don't watch any of the stuff in between. So I'm only seeing the big shows. So I'm only ever seeing Brock Lesnar on those shows. I think I've seen one show in the last 6 months from WWE that he wasn't on.
And I think the kind of style that Brock works only really works on these sort of bigger shows once every 2 or 3 months. You can't be having 5-minute matches every month because people are just going to get bored. Whereas now he's got an aura around him. So even though the match only goes 5 minutes or so, it just feels more special.
Yeah. I think they got this one a little bit wrong. Even though it's stuck to the Brock formula of it's 5 minutes and there's loads of finishes, it felt like, because he didn't win, it felt weird that the match was that short. Like, if Lesnar had won this match, it wouldn't have felt weird that it was 5 minutes long. But the fact that he lost, it felt odd to me. Like, you shouldn't really have him be losing that quickly, especially against somebody who's like their first match at this level. Which, if you think of, Drew has never been involved in big title matches. Like, this is his first big title match. So I think they should have made this into a much longer match. Personally, I felt that is how they should have gone with it.
I sort of disagree with you, just because I think if it had gone longer, it would have been a bad match. And I think I understand what you're saying, but I think for the big combination of your new big star, you want them to win it in a good match, not necessarily a match that might make a bit more sense kayfabe-wise, you know?
Yeah, it coming at the end of the show, I think you probably would have burned people out if you'd done a longer match. So I understand why it was the length it was, especially having to follow that goddamn last man standing. But from a logic point of view, I don't see the sense in Lesnar losing that quick.
I think you can sort of make the... So all of his other quick matches have been against smaller guys. So I think you can sort of make the argument of Brock tried to wrestle the same match he does against these smaller guys. But obviously because Drew is more his equal, it sort of backfired on him.
I suppose you could tell that story. But I would have liked to have seen it play out a little bit more. That's the feeling that I get from it.
Yeah. Maybe there's a bit more of a middle ground, because I think
I'm not saying they should have gone half an hour. I'm not saying that.
Yeah. No, but I'm thinking now, maybe the match wasn't even 5 minutes. I think it was a little bit shorter than even that.
Well, when they hit the ring, there was 7 minutes left on the show. So
yeah.
I'm really not sure how long the match was. I'll actually go and take a quick look.
I want to say it was actually 2 or 3.
4:35.
Yeah. So maybe stick on another couple of minutes, make it 6 or 7 minutes long.
Yeah. It didn't quite feel right to me. And that's the reasoning that I've given myself for it not feeling right, is that it just didn't feel organic, that it went from a bunch of F5s to a couple of claymores, you know.
That's fair.
There wasn't enough space and enough logic in between all of those Brock finishes and those Brock big moves and the actual end of the match.
That's fair. I think when you look at other Brock matches, they're not just completely finisher fests. There is a bit more connective tissue in between, which this match sort of lacked. So I sort of see where you're coming from.
Yeah, that's my take on that one. But it's rare for me to turn around and say I thought the match was too short. Because that's the opposite of what I've been saying about pretty much everything for the last year. Is that everything's too long? People are taking too long in the main event structure. But sometimes there needs to be that logic. It doesn't make sense to go from one guy getting their ass beat to them suddenly being the winner, unless it's a fluke. And it very much wasn't a fluke. It was a decisive victory for Drew, which is, I guess, what they felt he needed. But at the same time, if you're going to do it that way, you kind of need to tell the whole story, and they didn't. So yeah,
Fair.
there was an issue there for me.
Fair. Fair. I can't argue too much. Firefly Funhouse?
See, they called this a match, and it wasn't. So it was a segment.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to call it a match either. It was a video package.
Yeah. Which is why I preferred it to the Boneyard. Because the Boneyard was kind of defined as an athletic competition. There was a winner, there was a loser. This was a lot closer to art than the Boneyard.
Yeah, I think with the Boneyard, you look at it and you sort of go, right, they did something really cool and different, and that's exciting. But there's not much more to chew on beyond that. Whereas with the Firefly Funhouse, not only did they do something cool and different, but there's actually stuff to talk about beyond just, hey, look how cool and different this is. There's more moments I'm going to remember from the Firefly Funhouse than there is from the Boneyard match.
Oh, for sure. I think
And I say this as someone that really, really loved the Boneyard match.
the Firefly Funhouse, when it started, I was very much with everyone else on the what the hell is this? But as soon as they had him, let me just say to start with that I felt that what they were going for, they fell a little bit short of. They could have done this better. They leaned a little bit too much on the goofiness, where they could have made it a real serious thing of mind games. And I liked that they played it off as Bray getting inside Cena's head. But when they were doing so they did the ruthless aggression thing, and he comes out like he was dressed in like 2002 and hits the ring. And everything up to that point, I'm like, this is really well done. But then they did little cartoon noises when he was missing with the punches, and I felt that was just a little bit too far. It was a
I
little
think,
bit too much sauce. You couldn't taste the meat.
I think I'm just going to let that sit there for a minute because that was good. I think what the reasoning for that was probably because of what Bray Wyatt the character is. There's the happy, jovial Firefly Funhouse Bray, and then there's the Fiend. So it was probably an attempt to try and have both of those ideas in the actual segment.
They definitely
So.
tried to force home the whole the Firefly Funhouse stuff being the start of the match, and it's all fun and games, and then it takes a change in gears towards the end, and the idea is that the Fiend can beat John Cena, whereas like Bray Wyatt could never beat John Cena, and I like
Yeah.
that. That was very clever. It was very well done. Some of the stuff that they did in between was also really well done. So the having the original Bray Wyatt, the Wyatt family
I
run
really liked that. I
referenced in
really,
there,
really liked that.
and I liked that they put like the Cena defeat in there as a turning point, and the fact that that was Cena being in Bray Wyatt's head. It was a real, it actually, they played it out like this mental battle between the two, where that's the point at which Bray Wyatt had lost.
Yeah,
And I
and
like that. I like that a lot. the it's kind of debatable where they went between that and then the end of the match. And I think this is the bit where I think they lost some people, but doing like Saturday night's main event is
That did,
showing that's kind
I
of
think,
saying that that's where Cena is from.
yeah, I think that was a bit like it worked. Oh, no, I don't know, actually. I'm not going to say it worked. I know what they were going for, but I think this is a better example of what you were saying of there was a bit too much sauce,
Yeah.
not enough meat, where I think the basic idea was, look, Bray is getting in Cena's head and he's making him relive all of his past, all these things that he sort of resembles, because the Saturday night's main event then goes into the NWO stuff.
Yeah.
So you're making a real Cena as Hogan thing.
Yeah, I like the NWO thing. For, because it was like showing what a John Cena heel turn might have been, but without actually doing it, because they deliberately had him come out with the NWO kind of style. And I know what you're saying, that they're basically saying he's Hogan, but like he never did the heel thing. But you look at what he's wearing when he came out, and it's like they are saying that he was a heel. But they never actually like portrayed him as one. If this is the depth that they actually went into thinking about this, that it wasn't. Also, this is the first time in forever they haven't spelled out what they're doing. It isn't. It is the, you're not being spoon-fed stuff. We're actually talking about what could this mean and what could this mean, because they actually left it there. They left it vague, and they never do that. That's the best thing about this. They actually left stuff open for interpretation, and. Where this differed to the Boneyard is the Boneyard was them attempting to do a movie as a wrestling match. This was them doing wrestling as a movie.
Yes, I think, like I said, there's a lot more to actually, there's a lot more meat to chew on with this match. There's, again, I don't fully agree with your interpretation of that NWO bit.
But
I
that's the
think
thing,
that,
you can
yeah,
actually
that's
see
the
it
thing.
two different ways. See, they never do that.
And we have to, like, the story is this was basically entirely Bray Wyatt's idea. Cena sort of cut a few things here and there, but this was all Bray Wyatt. And most of the time, what he does doesn't really land. And I think we have to appreciate that this is the time where, fair play, his sort of ideas of an understanding of his character really hit and really worked.
Bray Wyatt is the kind of guy who I want on my creative team. I want him pitching stuff because, like, the way his brain works is different to other people. So you're going to get unique ideas out of him. This is the kind of thing where you want, like, what he does to go through a filter. So, and sometimes you can just let it go through unfiltered and just say, like, oh, this is a great idea, just run with it. And sometimes you want to just put the brakes on some of it just because it doesn't make sense. But I like that this was so open to interpretation. You just don't get that from this company. You don't ever get that from this company. So like giving him that creative freedom was extremely welcome here. And I know what you're saying about sometimes his things don't land. I get that. But this was really well done.
I think Bray is the. I'm going to make a weird comparison here, but I think he's sort of like Peak Russo, where he's a guy you want in the room and you
Yeah.
want talking at you and coming up with ideas, but you don't want to just let him go completely unfiltered. You need someone there to go, okay, this is a bit too far, or maybe you could take this further, but you don't want to get him. You don't want to give him the book completely.
No, of course not.
And I
But
think
you want his ideas. And
you want his
WWE is the kind of
ideas.
company where you can get away with that because they have that many people. In their creative process, I don't know if it might become a little stifling and frustrating for him, but I would much rather he did this than wrestle.
Completely, completely. And I think credit to him as well, those first few Firefly Funhouses, the actual segments, were really, really good. So again, he clearly has good ideas, but somewhere along the way, whether that's him or whether that's someone else getting involved, they sort of fall apart.
Yeah, it's I'm going to use a reference point as the Randy Orton WrestleMania match where they had stuff like broadcast onto the canvas.
Yeah, the Worms match.
Yeah, that was terrible. That was absolute garbage.
Yep, completely.
So that's an example of it going to pieces. And I seriously doubt you could have done this in any way in front of a live crowd. This was the absolutely perfect place to do this.
You could have, I think you could have just aired this as is if there was a crowd. I don't know if it would work or not. I can see why it would and I can see why it wouldn't. But I think if you're going to do a show in front of no crowd, this is what you do.
This is what you want to do, yeah.
Yeah.
Feel free to let your imagination run wild. And this was my criticism of night one. Like, I felt like they hadn't got an imagination, let alone let it run wild. This is what I wanted from these shows, bizarrely. I didn't know it until I saw it, but then when I saw it, I was like, this is what I wanted.
But I think, devil's advocate a little bit, if you had more than one of them per show, they might not feel as special. I think there's a reason you had the Boneyard on night one,
yeah,
and Firefly Funhouse on night two.
I agree with that. It's very much a case of you would have to limit how often you did this, otherwise it just would feel weird. I wouldn't want to see anything like this for a long time.
Yeah.
But and also, I don't think this is a wrestling match. It shouldn't be on. It's on like Cage Match as a recommended match. And I'm just looking at it again like, well, it's not a match.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I don't even think the Boneyard should be considered as a match either. I think they're two segments more than anything. It's difficult to talk about them in the same way that you talk about, say, Daniel Macabre, Judas Icarus, you know?
Yeah.
You can't compare
I don't feel
those
like
two matches.
These two things have happened in the same world.
No. So I agree with you. People shouldn't really be talking about them as matches, but equally, it's hard to really, because of, let me really be careful how I say this. I think wrestling discourse in general is very, very simplistic on a lot of the board. So I think some people, when you see something that is a bit outside of the box, instead of going, okay, well, this is this whole new thing, they try to make it into something that already exists. I don't know if anything I'm saying makes sense.
No, that does make sense. Because like I'm saying, you can't... I mean, I didn't rate this. I don't think anyone can rate this. That's why it shouldn't be down as a recommended match on Cage Match. It shouldn't have these ratings. Because how do you just sit there and go like, oh, this is a 3.5 stars. You can't. Yeah. And I think the vast majority of people on there have gone like 10 or 0. Well, there's 87 tenths. 9 zeros.
I think it will be a lot less divisive than the Boneyard. Because again, the execution was just very, very good.
Yeah. And this is one of the things where WWE are better at something. And they are better at doing documentaries where there's a lot of reference to their own history, and the whole of this was just a series of references to the past.
Yeah, I think they've sort of been treading on nostalgia for the last decade, if not more, and there are times where it doesn't work when they bring in part-timers or old guys or whatever, and there's times like this where it's more of a icing on the cake than the actual cake itself. that it really works.
Yeah, this is interesting, and WWE don't usually do interesting, so I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I think coming out of this entire weekend, this is going to be the big thing that's remembered. I keep talking about, how this weekend is going to be remembered 5, 10 years from now. I think this is going to be the big takeaway, is the Firefly Funhouse and potentially the elevation of Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, I think you're going to look at it looking back as this is how they coped when they couldn't have a crowd, and that
Yeah.
their basic wrestling setup was had to be completely abandoned. And if this goes on for a long time, it'll be interesting to see what else they come up with. In both senses of that word, in that they might come up with something that is even better than this. Or they might come up with something that is even terrible. Just that it could potentially go in both directions because they could take it too far, or they could find some wackiness that they've
Yeah.
been unable to plumb beforehand. For the Firefly Funhouse, that's something that I think you could put on like IMDb and just say that's a thing.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with you. Is it worth, is there anything, I don't know what happened on Raw. Is there anything interesting there, or is it just a show?
Not really. Not really.
Okay.
You got the they did a load of stuff with the Street Profits, and that ended up as a trios match with the women involved.
Okay.
They did a near 30-minute match between Aleister Black and Apollo Crews, which did not see that coming.
This was clearly just a time filler show.
Yeah, and then they did a bunch of squashes. Nia Jax squashed Deonna Purrazzo.
Oh, so Naya's back.
Yeah, and Drew beat the Big Show in the main event.
Oh, that might be fun.
But yeah,
That might be
there's a
fun.
lot of filler there.
Yeah. I reckon they've got through WrestleMania and now they're going to really reconsider even putting on shows. I think they just had to get through this one show.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do, but
Yeah. Right, I think we're all done.
yeah, that's it. That's everything.
Ugh.
Which is it's better than what we were gonna do originally, which was I was gonna review 40 shows and we were gonna do about four or five podcasts like in between just talking about what I've been watching. So
Yeah.
I'm basically gonna do nothing for a week.
Same. I reckon we will probably. It might be worth trying to record some kind of special show in a week or two. But I don't know. Like, there's no wrestling really anymore. I don't know what we can talk about.
We could certainly talk about the way that wrestling has been affected, and I think over the coming weeks and months we're going to see a couple of companies just cease to exist, which
I think we're very, very close to that. I think you can connect some dots and look at some things and go, there are some companies which maybe by the end of next week even might not be around anymore.
yeah, so yeah, we'll see what's happening and talk about
Sweet.
that. You can follow me on Twitter at Arnold Furious. I'm locked at the moment, so you have to request.
Ooh, fancy. You can follow me on AkilK94. I'm not locked, so have at it.
All right, well, we'll see when you see.